Hey, Zero Block 30 listeners, you can find us every Tuesday and Friday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and YouTube. Prime members can also listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
Quality sleep optimizes recovery, helping professional and everyday athletes perform their best. Only the Sleep Number Smart Bed is proven to improve the quality of sleep and provides valuable insights that can be used to support overall wellness. Talent on a college team allows the best players to outperform their opponents, but in the NFL, everyone is talented. Players entering the draft need every competitive edge they can get, starting with quality sleep. Training will only get more intense as players transition to the pros, so to optimize recovery, they can rely on Sleep Number for consistent, high-quality sleep. Experience game-changing sleep with a Sleep Number smart bed only at a Sleep Number store.
Today's episode of Zero Block 30, we have five full rounds in the magazine. Round number one, Senator Rand Paul is introducing a victory bonus for all Iraq and Afghanistan vets. And wait, what? We won?
We won!
We won!
Let's go!
More winning people. Round two, what happens when the always newsworthy Florida man gets his hand on a rocket-propelled grenade launcher? Round number three, we're going to take you on the first ever ZBT field op to examine a famous warfighter's house. We aren't sure who the house belongs to, so we're going to do a little recon to find out for ourselves. Round number four, Kate, take it away.
Ground control to Captain Cons. Yep, one of your fellow West Point alums is going on a historic spacewalk. Obviously, we are out in the moonwalk now.
Yeah, because fuck Michael Jackson and anyone who loves him. Round number five is a timeless tradition. Roma's military art has been discovered that is quite literally rock hard. Folks, surprising, I know, for this podcast, but we're going to do a little dick joke goofing. Let's get started with the show today, which is brought to you by our good friends at My Natural CBD. Are you tired of waking up tired or being in pain throughout the day? It is time you tried My Natural CBD. Now legal in all 50 states, hemp-based CBD is a new wonder supplement being used by everyone from office warriors to serious athletes to stress, anxiety, pain, and insomnia. Our friends at My Natural CBD are offering a discount to our listeners on their fantastic selection of THC-free tinctures, gummies, vapes, and bath bombs that will help you relax and refocus, all without the worry of failing a drug test. With free two-day shipping on your door, to your door with orders over $75 and a 10% discount on your entire order by using the code ZBT, this is too great of a deal to pass up. Head to My Natural CBD to check out their product selection and start feeling better fast. Let's get going with the full out show. I'm excited for today's show, which, by the way, just for those keeping score at home, if you follow me on Twitter, you know we are recording for the second time today. Rand Paul said, it's important to know when it's time to declare victory and leave war. I think that time is long past, which I think we all here at Zero Block 30, we all agree. It's time to get the fuck out of Afghanistan. I don't know if there is a smooth transition that could possibly have after 18 years if we haven't got it done. Let's just pack it up and go home. But I think that's why we have issue calling it like victory money. Because Paul, who's a Republican lawmaker known for his libertarian views and tense relationship with party leadership, said the payout to veterans would cost taxpayers more than $7 billion. But it would also be an immediate saving of 83% when compared to the current yearly cost of nation building. Because after the war, the full 17 years, we're looking at, I believe the figure was $6.7 trillion that we've spent so far in Afghanistan and Iraq.
That's just a crazy, crazy number. So, I mean, these numbers are all fake, essentially. So if it's going to be $7 billion, $6.7 trillion, let's just get out if we can and save ourselves some money.
Yeah, it's insane. And like you said, chaps, to consider that that's a 83% savings on that much is
that's
still,
wild.
Yeah. It's crazy.
You're like, hey, we're only spending $87 billion or whatever that, what was the number? Yeah. $7 billion. That's an 83% savings. Think about, like, when I think about $6.7 trillion, the monetary value of the Dallas Cowboys, I believe, is at like $5 billion.
Right.
So with the money that we've spent, you're the West Point guy, Cons. Let's see if you can do that math in your head. How many times could you buy the Dallas Cowboys with what we've spent on the war on terror?
Just a whole bunch of times.
Yeah. $5 billion into $6 trillion goes in a lot. That's some big boy long division for sure. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I know the, you know, Rand Paul, 25K, 2.5K, sorry, 25K, maybe I'd be more on board, but 2.5K to every veteran who's in Iraq and Afghanistan. Like, that part, okay, interesting. But to say it's for victory, that like declaring it a victory, that was kind of the like, get the fuck out of here. Like, who are you pandering to? That to me was kind of a slap in the face, because anyone who's had boots on the ground there at any point could tell you from the privates to the top, well, this isn't really going to work. There will be no victory here.
It's like a wartime participation trophy. It's a participation trophy.
Let's call it a quagmire payout. Because, well, I just wish that they would give us the dignity of saying, yeah, this didn't work. Let's learn from it. Instead of being like, well, red, white, and blue, it's a victory. Like, none of us are that stupid.
No one ever is going to take the blame and say, you know what? Yeah, we didn't win here. You know, we might in this podcast, in this room, sit around and we can all agree, or you talk to any veteran and they'll say the same thing, that they agree. Like, yeah, we didn't achieve victory there. But no one with any sort of political stature or any sort of military stature is going to stand up and take that baton and say, yeah, we didn't win there. But I do appreciate that they are moving towards putting a tent pole in the ground and making a definitive statement saying, okay, we're leaving. This is what we're going to do. This is going to be the process. And even, you know, whether or not this happens is obviously up for debate, but it is encouraging that we're moving towards that.
But I don't know if we are. I mean, because Rand Paul's not in charge of shit, and
he
dumbass legislation all the time. It never
That's
goes
my point.
Through.
Yeah, I mean,
I think that we could have this legislation, but it's just like a show. We're not leaving Afghanistan anytime soon. I wish that we were, but because a lot of us, we don't really know what victory even looks like. When Mattis took over as Secretary of Defense, and one of his military philosophies of, that we have to have a clear and definable objective and the ability to win it with military power and overall dominance. We don't know what that looks like in Afghanistan. No.
Well, the goal was counterinsurgency. And what that requires is to build up the government and the infrastructure, not just in the cities, but all the way out to the smallest little tentacles of the country. And that hasn't happened at all. I mean, in the bigger cities, you can see it a little bit, but that's not sustainable. And that's the other part. You had to build up the infrastructure of the government and make it sustainable so that terrorists couldn't come back in and destabilize things. Mm-hmm. And create these vacuums and bring everything down. And that would be victory. Has not happened. And instead, we're negotiating with the Taliban again.
Because we're essentially, despite what movies say, movies say we don't do it, but we do it.
We're handing it back to the Taliban is what we're doing. We're being like, well, all right, well, let's make some deals with each other that, you know, you won't do this, this, and this, but here you go again. That's not victory.
Yeah, but I mean, even if had we accomplished that goal, that would still be somewhat subjective, in my opinion. It's not really concrete. Like, you'd have to go all the way back to World War II when there were nations fighting one another and there were formal documents signed that said, okay, we surrender. The Taliban's never going to sign any sort of document because there was never any declaration of war. Quite honestly, there was never a declaration of war by Congress. So it's just so subjective and so murky that no matter what, we were put in a position to fail almost, because it didn't matter what we would do, that declaring victory was kind of always going to be some sort of hollow statement.
One aspect that I would love to see, I might sign back up for Facebook and be involved in Facebook just for the purpose of following old people who I was buddies with in the Marines, because I would love to see the people who are like, bitch, you don't rate the $2,500 payment. You left after 6 weeks because you dropped a case of MREs on your foot. And like, no, man, like, I totally deserve it. I got hurt doing my job. Like, it would be funny.
Are we giving these bonuses to pogues?
Yeah. Fucking pogues.
Oh, fucking pogues,
man. You're telling me some Air Force pogue who sits behind the desk deserves me as a grunt because I'm so fucking badass?
Like, more like Chair Force. Anyway.
Women. Women.
I will say one good thing. I initially read the headline and I saw, oh, they're going to give everyone who served in Afghanistan a $2,500 bonus. Oh, good for them. And then I opened it up and I said, Iraq and Afghanistan. So that would include me as well. So I thought that was interesting that they're including everyone who served in Iraq as well.
Well, what are you going to buy? Included cons. We're
what are you going to buy, cons, with your 25K? 2.5K.
2.5K. You know, honestly, like, if it really did come into fruition and come into my bank account, I would like to think I could probably give it away to a charity that would need it. But if we're just talking about goofing.
Look at me, I'm cons. I care about people. Cool.
If we're just talking about goofing, you know what I would get? I don't know if you guys have ever seen these. They're these scooters, but they have a scooter attached to them. So you sit on the scooter and you ride around. They go like 20, 25 miles an hour. I would get
and they have like a subwoofer and like music and shit that plays too.
Yeah, I would definitely get one of those for a few of those for my buddies, and we would just ride around and own the tailgate.
I love that idea. Honestly, I think that's an excellent use of that money for sure.
We also took, because we know that military members and veterans very specifically would waste it a lot. You know who would be super happy with this victory bonus?
Who would that be?
The Rims and Tire Shop people.
Oh, yeah.
Any place that spells cars with a K and a Z is thrilled. Chaps, what are you buying with it?
I don't know what I would buy. I'd probably buy something that was just really frivolous and dumb. Like I would probably upgrade like a speaker or something like that. I wouldn't tell anybody in my family about it, and I would use it for my own gain. Just like I'd put it secretly in like my Amazon account and just buy stuff. Because I love it. Even when just stuff that shows up in the Amazon box, I don't know what's inside. I'm happy.
That's so awesome. Yeah. I like that. Well, I said on Twitter, I said I would buy tits with it. And immediately all these guys, clearly I'm just joking, immediately like seven dudes were like, actually, you can't afford a whole set of tits with that much money. You need more. I'm like, thank you, Professor Idiot.
Classic place of tits explaining.
But yeah, tits explaining to me. But some other people, Dr. T-Gas said meatball hoagies. That's what he's buying with his. Dylan Duh said tattoos and whiskey. Ryan Crum said, I'm investing it in companies that make moto t-shirts, AR-15s, beard wax, and jacked up trucks.
Disappointed that he didn't mention coffee, like that he's not going to invest in some coffee.
True.
Veteran coffee.
Right. Nick said Big Louie's, which was a strip club in Missouri outside Fort Leonard Wood. Solid agree. Spend it all in one night. Justin said Sour Skittles. That's a whole buttload of Sour Skittles, my friend. I guess that's your thing. Whatever. But yeah, we would absolutely waste the shit out of it. So, hey, Rand, hopefully that pans out for you.
How much money should we give Bren? Because he is PFC Bren.
Good question.
500. What if we each threw in 250?
How about we give him a $50 gift card to the Barstool store?
Yeah.
Perfect.
Just some Bren coming in like, dude, why do you have like 300 Saturdays Are for the Boys koozies.
Where did you get that Degrade Me sweatshirt? I really like it.
Yeah, you can get a lot of plan. Stuff.
Bren, that cropped sweatshirt is looking great on you, pal. The abs are popping.
Bren should totally be skateboarding in one of Ellie Schnitt's Men Are Trash hats. A great look, for sure. Yeah, I mean, the war thing overall, my final thoughts on the matter, it's silly. Like, it's never going to happen. And in my opinion, I know there's probably a lot of Rand Paul fans out there. It's typical Rand Paul, like just putting in stuff just to see what sticks. Like that's what Rand Paul does.
I'm just going to throw it out there and see what
I don't hate sticks. It.
Also, we don't make enough about that. Rand Paul got his ass whooped by his neighbor and had like millions of dollars settlement. You remember that?
Yeah, we definitely should bring that up more.
Here's an Applebee's coupon for anyone who served.
I need Rand Paul on Podfathers, actually, because I think that's the ultimate dad move, fighting with your neighbor over who's cutting their grass too short and just absolutely getting your ass bundled. And you don't expect that when you're a senator walking out and getting your ribs cracked open. I mean, we don't rib crack shame. If you break your ribs, then we feel bad for you, and we would never shame you on the podcast, especially not before we move on to round two.
Yeah. I've broken my ribs like 13 times.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yep.
That's intense. That's they break. Why are your ribs so fragile?
I broke them on our tour when we were in San Diego. I broke one on the surfboard. I broke them playing rugby repeatedly. Yeah.
Rugby makes sense. I didn't know you broke one on the Starbucks tour, though.
Broke them falling off a bike. Oh, yeah. They snap like twigs. That probably is maybe if I get this check, I'll get my ribs checked out.
Just a fragile lady.
Yeah. Anyways.
Yeah. Anyways, let's actually move on to round two. Here we go. Round number two, Florida man tries to fly home with an RPG in his check bag.
What's the issue?
When we were coming back from Atlanta, I realized I had a large because I took the bus down. So I took stuff that I couldn't take on a plane. I didn't really think about it. On the way back, I had a large. All it was a leave-in hair conditioner, but it was way too big for the liquids. And once I realized it was going through the thing, I was like, oh my God, oh my God. And I told someone, I'm like, excuse me, there's a big thing of liquid going through there. I'm so sorry. Turns out I also had a Gatorade bottle and a water bottle in there too, but whatever. I was a little hungover. I told them right away. So I can't imagine me freaking out about hair conditioner. This guy being like, RPG will be fine. Just a little rock.
Well, he definitely thought, oh, I'm checking it. So if you check it, you're good. It's not a carry-on. It's not a problem. It's not over 3 ounces.
And I also, I mean, it made me think of, there's been several different rappers who have gotten caught with like pistols in their bags that they forgot mm-hmm. about. How yeah. do you forget about having like a Glock whenever you go to the airport? Like, oh, just classic 9mm. Forgot it, dude. Like, it's in my carry-on. Sorry.
9mm goofing. I guess when you just carry them around so much, it just becomes one of those things that you just forget about. Becomes second nature almost.
If they could leave Kevin in Chicago for Christmas, you can leave a Glock in your bag. You know
yeah.
what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's just one of those things.
Things happen. Even our good pal Bryn, when we were coming home from going to the Daytona 500, Bryn pulled a pretty boot move at the airport. I mean, we yes. were all standing there outside the delicious Chili's, and whenever Bryn came up, we were all looked at him. We were like basically standing there like three disappointed parents when Bryn was like, "All right, guys, I got us a good spot over there. Put everything down. Put all the camera bags and stuff down over there."
Like 500 yards away. And yeah. he scrolls up to us.
All the way by the terminal.
Yeah.
So we had to tell him, like, "Hey, Brad, whenever they say don't leave unattended baggage, they kind of mean that."
Like, I was like, wait, what? Oh, because bombs.
Yeah.
I remember.
Because bombs, yeah.
I'll go back.
So basically, Bryn walked away from his luggage all the way over to the Chili's, like 500 yards away from our turn, just so he's like, don't worry.
He's done that before. That wasn't – I saw him – where else did we go, Bryn? I think it was on one of the Starbucks trips that we took. He's left his stuff to go eat or something like that. And it like kind of threw me for a loop. I just thought he was being a bad boy and not giving a shit. I was like, oh, man.
People do say that about me.
When I'm in an airport,
well on the record is saying that it was one of his first cross country flights too.
Oh, well, maybe that was it. But like when I'm in an airport and I walk like 20 feet from my bag to throw something in the garbage, I get nervous that like, oh, I'm walking away from my bag.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
He just, you know, a few gates away. No biggie.
That was a real power move, Bryn. A real power move. But other people have done crazy things at the airport. This story about the Florida man and the RPG made me go through other things that have been confiscated by the TSA. And I picked out a couple of my favorites. One, a model of an IED, an improvised explosive device, that is literally like, it's like 10 fake sticks of dynamite, like the red kind of sticks you'd see in Wile E. Coyote, with a mm-hmm. clock taped to it with wires coming out of it, all taped together. Like the traditional, like what a child pictures as a bomb. Someone went through.
Can you imagine walking through, putting that bad boy in one of the gray bins? It's going through. You go to the full body scanner. You put your arms up, your feet are shoulder width apart. It does a little scan around you. You walk through and they say, wait a minute right there, sir. You stop. Your bag comes out. And then all of a sudden, President Obama comes out dressed in a TSA uniform. And he's like, cool clock, Ahmed. Want to take it to the White House?
Yeah. I think that's how that went down too, by the way. Yeah. But yeah, just you were saying before the first time we recorded this, you were saying, imagine being the TSA person. You're like, socks, pajamas, toothbrush, next bag, socks, pajama, toothbrush. Holy shit balls. There is fucking like bomb ass bomb on here. But yeah, there's a bunch of other wacky shit.
And
too.
Also a huge dildo too. I feel like
if you have an IED,
there is no doubt a big old Billy in there. Oh.
Did you see there was the airport where the conveyor belt, they stuck one of those suction cup yeah. dildos to it and sent it around? Just a delight. But anyway, throwing stars and shivs, cane swords and shoe knives. This one was my personal favorite, a fully fueled chainsaw.
like what's wrong?
And the picture of it, it's a big ass chainsaw, and you can see like the oil on the bottom of the bag, the suitcase.
Oh my gosh!
What are you thinking?
I mean, I need to see the guy who had the chainsaw because he just has to look like an absolute all star. There's no chance that he doesn't have seasons upon seasons upon seasons of Duck Dynasty stored on his DVR. And he's yes. just like, going to Duluth, man. Got to bring my sock. Never know. It's, you know what?
Never know.
He's not wrong. When you're going to Duluth, you have no idea what you're going to need. And bringing a pocket chainsaw is always smart.
Always smart. Even bringing an enormous one. But military smoke grenades. Here, the next one, speaking of grenades, a collection of 4 40 mic grenades hidden inside a tactical vest.
I think it's important to note that you said hidden as if the x-ray scanner wasn't going to pick them up because right. they were hidden.
Right. Yeah. That one is a wild move. And then finally, snakes and turtles wrapped up in pantyhose. That made me so sad. But yeah, so people are smuggling all kinds of crazy shit. So
that, I mean, smuggled in, you could fit a lot. Recently, there was an article that somebody had 1,500 turtles that was sponsored. And animals can smash up. I've been watching this show, Dr. Pohl. He's a vet from Michigan. And recently, he had a puppy. It was, I believe, a Maltese puppy. And they said that the puppy was having trouble getting birth. This little dog was like 7 pounds. You want to know how many puppies she had inside her?
18.
It was 8, Cons. 8.
Wow. Puppies. Oh my God. Total guess. Total guess.
And she brought out 8 puppies. And I was like, man, can you imagine how many turtles that puppy could fit inside her? I bet 1,500. Yeah. They'll smash in there.
They're using Malteses to smuggle turtles. You heard it here first. Yeah, so wild.
Breaking news. Yeah, because that turtle underground market is rampant these days.
Yeah, but I mean, whenever we've all seen, whenever you go on these long trips, if you're a military member on movement, lots of times we'll take a civilian plane from the United States into like Germany or Kuwait and then have a follow-on military flight into the actual combat zone. But when I left from Japan. Japan has very strict gun laws. There's not a whole lot of guns there. They definitely have very strict C4 laws because as a dog handler, I would bring just a little bit of C4, just like a pound and a half usually of C4 with me. And it comes in one long strip and you use it to keep the dog going so he can still identify explosives whenever you're training and things like that. But going through with weapons, I mean, I had an M4, I had a long gun, I had a suppressor that was in there. The Japanese people were not used to seeing those bad boys go through the X-ray machines. They have big explanation to go through. You have to show a shit ton of paperwork to transfer those guns into international like territory because I had to go from Japan to California, then on and on and on. But it was stressful going through. I can't imagine just casually forgetting that you have 4 40-mic grenades, though. You would think.
Yeah, just think
you would
about that.
Wow. I got to declare that.
Jeff, you just said it was stressful.
A little staff NCO advice. You have 4 40-mic grenades. That's something you got to declare.
Yeah. Chaps, I mean, you're saying that's stressful and you were not breaking any rules or laws. You were allowed to be carrying everything that you had on you. So yeah, imagine if you were carrying all sorts of contraband that was not illegal rather. But anyway, we digress.
Yep. Let's move on to round 3. Time for round 3. And you guys are in for a little bit of a treat because we need a little bit of music to set the tone. Bren, cue a little music, please. Oh, no. Anything but that.
Ah, much better, Bren. As we walk up a long, steep cobblestone pathway, the landscape is noticeably wet with morning dew. Like most mornings in early March, frost is in the air and still dead grass crunches beneath our feet.
Kate, get off the damn grass.
I'm not active duty anymore, and I'll do as I please.
It's not because of that. It's not because like a devil dog thing. It's because of the noise it makes. It's a dead damn giveaway.
Ah, oh, my bad. But yes, moving off the grass, we scurry back onto the aforementioned cobblestone pathway, which was wet with morning dew.
You already said that.
All right. Quit interrupting. I'm losing my train of thought. I'll do as I please. The pathway was still wet with morning dew.
Why are you talking like that?
Morning dew. As we approached the door, I could see it was a typical doormat. Thick rubber, black. It would be completely plain if not for the big yellow footprints, bright as the morning sun, which shone, shined, and have shone.
Have shone. Nailed it. Have shone.
Brightly on the long, steep cobblestone pathway, which lined the driveway and was wet with morning dew.
Chaps and Kate enter the house while being very cautious to not disturb any evidence. Connor waits patiently on their cues to enter, but is growing impatient. He thinks to himself,
I really need to get enough Instagram followers for a swipe up.
Chaps and Kate begin to look around. The house is orderly and extremely bare.
Can I come inside yet?
That's what she said. Kate begins to really investigate. She comes across an old cigar, a lowball tumbler whiskey glass, and leaning down closely, she can make out the name of the cigar. And, as you guessed, it's a good one.
Ah, the old Daniel Marshall Red Label, hailing from the Plasencia factory in Nicaragua, and comes to the brim with premium Nicaraguan long leaves from Jalapia, all concealed by a binder from Esteli. These tobaccos are then covered by a Nicaraguan-grown 5-year-aged Habano wrapper, and the result is an amazingly creamy character that presents some hints of spice and cedar throughout. thoroughly well-balanced Red Label is as smooth as it is flavorful, with a solid medium to full body. I'd say it's rated 90 by Cigar Aficionado. This is an excellent everyday option for only the most discerning aficionado.
Holy shit, Kate. I knew that you rip cigs from time to time, but my goodness, I had no idea that you learned so much about cigars.
Buddy, it's 2019. I thought we were respecting women. I know.
That's a good point, Kate. Shame on you, chaps. You know, as a West Point graduate who played football, we often would smoke
cigars. This cigar tells us that the gentleman or lady who is smoking here is one of the highest aplomb. Now, onto the notes of whiskey. Take an old whiff-a-rooney here, Cons.
Ah, yes. American made. The aromas here are deep and complex. A wave of alcohol leads off, but soon dissipates as the palate adjusts. Emerging wafts of cinnamon stick and dark, salty caramel are present as the fusels become lost in the air. There's a pronounced red berry note as well, which adds depth and an unexpected brightness. The grain-forward nature of this whiskey also leaves an air of baking bread in my nostrils, which brings back the aforementioned toasty burnt sugar note. Yes, indeed, this is a Whistle Pig Farm stock, an incredible American whiskey, if you ask me.
Well said, Cons, but you are full of shit, my friend, because I just found a bottle of Jim Beam right behind the chair. This is just regular old $12 Jim Beam. Connor's face turns slightly red while Kate looks at him disapprovingly. What do these cigars, the lone empty room that is filled with simply two bookshelves, nice cigars, steep whiskey, and a single leather chair, tell us about the occupant of this home?
Well, I'm going down a rabbit hole on the bookshelf right now, chaps.
I think you just mean you're like looking at it, inspecting it. It's not really a rabbit hole because it's not like the internet where you can
Google. Oh, you're mansplaining bookshelves in 2019. I thought we were respecting women, but that's all right. I've noticed that these books all share a common theme. And here's the titles. Here's what I'm seeing. Carl von Clausewitz on War. Julian Stafford, Some Principles of Maritime Strategy. Delbruck, History of the Art of War Within the Framework of Political History. Machiavelli, The Art of War. Alfred Thayer, The Influence of Sea Power Upon History, 1660 to 1783. And on they go. So there's so many war books here. There must be probably about 10,000 of them.
Check out this towel jacket.
Holy shit. Where'd you come from, Bren?
Bren, that's not a towel jacket. That's a monk's robe.
I was skateboarding out back. I was practicing my kickflips.
Oh, that's cool. Wait a minute. I got it.
I like skateboarding.
Damn it, Bren. We get it. Now, cigars, whiskey, 10K books on war, a monk's robe. I think I know whose house this is. Chaps? This is General Mattis's house. You guys are idiots. Not everything is Jason Bourne. We're in Quantico and officer housing.
Well, I mean, it was a good guess. You have to admit it was a good guess.
No. Anyway, here's how we found that story. This was a tweet that we saw that inspired.
Hold on, before we keep going in, we have to acknowledge that was ridiculous.
But absolutely.
On the podcast, we can try some new things. That was trying it out, folks. We're on episode 144. We're keeping it fresh for you. It might be 145. We're keeping it fresh. Now, Kate, explain a little background of why we got into that.
That was a screenplay that Chaps wrote based off of a tweet that we saw. Based off of a guy who says he worked with General Mattis. And this tweet so inspired Chaps that as soon as I shared it in the sheet, he was like, oh, he just started typing and was like, come back to the sheet in like an hour. I'm writing something. He wrote that little screenplay for us. But here is the tweet that it was based off of. A friend of mine is a retired Marine Corps colonel that was an aide to a general. He said that when this general took command at CENTCOM, his only home furniture was a giant bookcase full of books, one chair, one table, and one mattress on the floor. That general was General Mattis, true warrior monk. Wow. So,
I think that's exactly what I expect him. Like with his reputation, that's what I expect. I expect his bed, which is probably no bigger than a twin, sitting on straight up black iron post in between two windows that are in his master bedroom, and it's perfectly covered in a line. He's right. The only thing that he covers himself with is the olive drab wool blanket with 18 inches of white on there as well, with the plain white pillow neatly padded down and probably a mint stuck on there. He has a bedside table in the morning that only has his glass of whiskey from the night before, a little picture, a 12 by 12 portrait of the Virgin Mary with his rosemary over it, and a little pillow that he places by his knees where he prays like
and
Colonel this is, Al Moore. Every single
this time. Is like, as soon as we saw this tweet, you started saying these things. Like, I feel like as soon as you saw the tweet about how he had one chair, one table, one mattress on the floor. So General Mattis, who probably has a ton of money at this point, living so simply, you started saying these things because you just had a vision. So I feel like you had to write that little screenplay and get it out of your system.
40 years with no family. What else is he going to do? I feel like that is exactly what I expect. But honestly, I don't know how much I really love it, because that kind of, to me, there's two schools of thought that you're going to have about it. One, he's self-aware, or two, he's not self-aware, and this is just who he is as a person. And that's a mystery that we'll have to solve for another time. Let's move on to round four.
All right, heading into round four with a little bit of lady power for you guys. NASA announced Tuesday that its first ever all-female spacewalk will take place later this month on March 29th on the International Space Station, and it's going to feature astronauts Anne McClain and Christina Koch, who will be aided on the ground by flight directors Mary Lawrence and Kristen Facciol at NASA's Mission Control at the Johnson Space Center in Houston. We're taking over space, that's right. Vagina's in space, we're all over it. Yep, vagina's in
space cooch
3000 gobbler. In the past, spacewalks have been mostly conducted by male astronauts. These hour-long operations typically involve making repairs and upgrades on the outside. But this March 29th, it's going to be about 7 hours long. And I just think it's cool that not only are the astronauts in the, I was going to say in the air, but in the space, are going to be doing it, and the people leading them on the ground. But a couple things. Anne McClain, the one astronaut who will be out doing the spacewalk, she is a West Point grad, too, Cons. She graduated in 2012, or 2002. Listen to what she went on to study for her master's. The unsteady aerodynamics and flow visualization of free-to-roll non-slender delta wings.
Classic.
I mean, you're having trouble just saying that.
But I just wanted to read off a couple of her accolades. She flew Kiowa Warrior attack helicopters in Iraq, flying over 800 combat missions. She graduated the U.S. Naval Test Pilot School, which, if you go down a rabbit hole in that, crazy shit. And then she was selected to be an astronaut, a NASA astronaut. But she's done over 20 different rotary and fixed-wing aircraft. She can fly 20 different fucking aircraft, which to me is insane.
I can't fly one.
No, I can't fly a single one. That's why it's so crazy to me. But yeah, she's been up in space since December. So you can follow her on Twitter. I think it's like An Animal or something like that, but it's really fucking cool. She was also a rugby player. So shout out to her. I am excited to see how that goes at the end of March.
Now I have a question for you, Kate. We talked about last week, or maybe it was earlier this week, with our guy Buzz Aldrin. He's wearing the bow tie. He's wearing the bolo. And he's wearing the long tie. What's the female equivalent to that, that these ladies, when they come back off the first all-female space shuttle, what can they do to have that kind of big dick energy?
It's an ascot with a Texas tie over top.
Okay.
And the Texas tie, the little metal part, is encrusted in Swarovski crystals.
Yeah. I don't think that's tacky enough.
There'll be ruffles involved and shoulder pads as well.
Right. So. I was thinking you're going to say a purse, a pocketbook, and a clutch.
Oh, that too. It could be.
Yeah.
Oh, guys, it's 2019. We're wearing ties too. Just saying.
That's fair. All right. Well, congratulations to those ladies. That is a huge accomplishment to be an astronaut. We need an astronaut on the show, by the way. If you're an astronaut and you're listening on Space Station Mirror, if that thing is still going around, hit us up. Join us on the DMs. We want to have an astronaut talking, because I want to know what goes through your head the first time that you fly out of Earth's orbit and you're like, holy shit, I'm no longer on planet Earth, because you would have to feel like you'd have this existential crisis that goes on and realize how small and tiny and insignificant you are. And also, I would say that now is the greatest time to be an astronaut. Lots of people would say in the 60s when Buzz and the boys went on the actual moon, but they couldn't take sick ass selfies.
This is true. They couldn't tweet. They couldn't flex. They couldn't stunt on everyone back on little old Earth. So
could you imagine if you had Instagram and Buzz Aldrin walks out on the moon and he like tweets out that he's going live on Periscope? He's like, all right, I'll start talking, giving my speech. we're going to give our speech as soon as we get 500,000 people watching. And he just into a space helmet. And then he's like, all right, we got the 500,000. Let's get it going. One giant leap for man. One giant leap for mankind.
Wow, you really, really butchered that. Wow.
Yeah. What is it?
One small step for man, one giant leap for mankind.
All right, let me do it again. One small step for man, one giant leap for mankind.
And then I'd be in the comments going, you're not really on the moon, bro. You're not. You're full of shit, man. That's a filter.
You know what they would be saying? There would be people in the Instagram comments like, look at this fucking astronaut. What a pogue. What a pogue.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, all right, let's move on to round number five. Round number five, we're going to do a little bit of dick goofing. So that's going to be brought to you by our friends at Dollar Shave Club. They have everything that you need to feel and smell your best. What I even love more is that I never have to go to the store to get all of my toiletry needs. Basically, anything that I need in the bathroom that's not an actual toilet, a tub, or a mirror you could get from Dollar Shave Club. They have everything that you need to get ready no matter what you're getting ready for. They have you covered from head to toe, your hair, your skin, your face, your butthole, whatever. They have it, and it's going to be at a great cost. Just like whenever you walk into a new ladies or a new dude's room and they have their lovely spearmint on the wall, you know that they're a person who not only has great taste, but they appreciates good value, because there's value all over the place with a little bit of Dollar Shave Club action. And right now you can get any of their handsome discounts, because you're going to get the more you get, the more you save. And right now they have a bunch of starter sets that you can try for just $5, like their oral care kit. After that, the restock box tip regular size products at a regular price. So what are you waiting for? Get your starter set for $5 right now. The best thing about the starter sets is if you travel and you go through TSA with an RPG, they have ones that fit airline qualifications too, like under 3 ounces or whatever the fuck it is. Starter sets are just $5 right now. DollarShaveClub.com/chaps. DollarShaveClub.com/chaps to get that great deal. We'll move on into round number five. The crude outline of a penis, though associated with juvenile humor these days, has long held deep symbolic meaning. So much so that archaeologists from Newcastle University discovered this week that ancient Roman workers etched an oversized penis into a stone at a quarry near Hadrian's Wall when they were stationed there in 2007 AD, long time ago, a lot longer than 12 years
ago. 207 AD, by the way, quarry is almost as bad as my Nicaragua, my pronunciation of Nicaragua.
Quarry.
I was blown away by this because it looks 100% exactly like the dicks we draw in Port-a-Johns today. The balls are perfect. It's a little funny at the tip. It's rock hard. It's enormous. I just feel like I love that this
spoiler is- Kate, penises have looked the same since forever.
But I mean,
well, I think that- funny by the tip, what she means is it's uncircumcised.
Okay, guys. But like hieroglyphics and old cave drawings don't look as good as the ones we do now. You know what I mean? Like it's like drawing has evolved, but the dick graffiti has always been the same, and it transcends all barriers, time, distance, language, culture. We're drawing dicks and it looks great. I'm so impressed by it. And I love that that's like the common thread. I don't know.
Credit to the Romans.
Big time credit to the Romans. I mean, I think that anytime that you've had war basically shows that war hasn't changed in legitimately millennia. I mean, whenever you hear these constant things about the warriors in World War II were different, World War I were different, the Korean War were different. You can go all the way back to 207 AD now and be like, buddy, we were the same. We were porta potty goofing. We were drawing dicks on everything since 207. That's just the way it goes down.
Oh, yeah. Further note, I want to say in the Roman era, the dick wasn't just like, hey, look at this dick because we're bored taking a dump. It was a symbol of good luck. So I just want to say, look what happened to the Roman Empire, folks. And that I blame dicks for.
Now, this is where we're cooking with gas. And this is why this podcast is meaningful to lots of people in the veteran community. Because if you harken back to a couple weeks ago, maybe even a couple months ago, when we talked about pilots drawing dicks, one commander was completely relieved because there's dicks all over the squadron. Mm-hmm. I think if you go back and you listen to this now and people say something to you, all you have to say is, I'm hearkening back to history. This is a military history lesson. I'm doing this as a portion of good luck for the men and women who are serving our beloved country overseas. And if you don't like me drawing dicks, then ispo facto, you don't support the troops.
Yeah, no commander could argue with that logic. It's impenetrable. Yeah. Way to go.
Yeah.
There you go. I think that's it for the episode today. We will move into a little bit of save rounds, alibis. I know we all have some. Cons, we'll start with you.
Yeah, I have two. The first one's a little sad. Cadet at West Point, Peter Zhu, suffered an injury on the ski slopes and ultimately lost his life. So our condolences go out to his family. But I also wanted to share, we often talk about tradition and ceremonies in the military. And there's a ceremony that we do at West Point when a cadet dies, and it's called a TAPS vigil. So every night at 11:30 is TAPS. So when there's going to be a TAPS vigil around 11:10, 11:15, every cadet in the Corps starts to file out of their room in their dress uniform. No one speaks to anybody. All the lights on campus are shut off on the plane where they walk out to. So it is completely pitch black. And as I mentioned, nobody is saying a word to anybody. Everyone just walks up to the plane and stands at parade rest. And then at precisely 11:30, 21-gun salute goes off. And then everyone snaps to attention as a bugler plays TAPS, and followed by a lone bagpiper will play the first verse of Amazing Grace. And then the second verse is followed by a group of bagpipers, and they finish up, followed by the glee club will start singing the alma mater, and everyone in the Corps will start to sing along very quietly and solemnly. And then when the alma mater finishes, everyone just starts to file back out of their, back to their rooms, their respective rooms, and the whole time not saying a word, just showing honor to that cadet that was, that died. So it's just a nice ceremony to do to remember someone who dies while a cadet at West Point. And then my other save round. So right now is Lent, started this week on Wednesday with Ash Wednesday. I am a Catholic. I'm practicing Catholic, a good Catholic boy. My mother will be happy to hear that. Hmm. I went and I got my ashes, went to Mass. So for Lent this year, though, I think I'm going to give up correcting people because I think I do it too much. I think I'm a little bit of a know-it-all. Oh. And I've realized recently when a few people have corrected me on something, I realized that's pretty freaking annoying. Maybe you should stop doing that, dickhead. So I'm going to try to start doing that, and then hopefully that'll just become a habit for me to not correct people.
Well, if you feel the need to, you can reach out to me or Cons and correct one of us anytime.
Okay, Kate.
Chaps. Oh, Kate, were you about to correct me?
Yeah, Kate, it's Kiowa helicopters, not Kiowa. So
thank you. Thank you. Get it out of your system. I'm not giving anything up, but maybe I'll try to be, I'm not religious at all, but maybe I'll just try to be a little nicer.
Okay.
Fuck you, Cons.
You have any save rounds, Kate?
Nope, none.
All right. My save round is this week, President Trump signed an executive order for the epidemic that is suicide prevention. In fact, Kate and I just got a DM from one of our buddies who follows along with the show as well. A Marine veteran lost his battle to PTSD yesterday. He leaves behind his wife, his 13-year-old son, and 8-year-old daughter. The family's facing obviously some type of financial burden because of what happened, and it's terrible. And I think that a lot of times we get hyped up about these executive orders, but I want to remind everybody in 2012, Barack Obama signed the same exact type of thing. Executive orders, you can't pin whip something like this, like that's going on across the military and the veteran community as a whole. It's got to be a concentrated effort, constantly talking about it, constantly talking to your buddies. This is on the veteran communities just as much, if not more so, than it's on the VA as a whole. The VA has the programs in effect, but we have got to encourage people to do it. We've got to remove the stigma. And I think that we've come a long way, but we have a long way to go. No executive order is going to accomplish that. But if President Trump manages somehow to get the VA activated and get more people involved in going in and getting treatment, I think that, along with his reducing the time that you have to wait at the VA, should be the hallmark of the first 4 years of his presidency. That's all I'll have to say about that. If he does improve it, we will definitely give credit where credit is due. But as of right now, an executive order is not enough. There needs to be real action. But hopefully it's the beginning. Sound the retreat.